Welcome, this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight's show, I thought we would do this, and it sounds like a strange one, I know, on the spiritual implications of individual versus group karma. You might say, huh? Why is that? Yeah, but the thing is that it actually applies to a lot of stuff that's going on right now. If you live in the U.S. or other parts of the world similar to the U.S., you're experiencing some of the issues that this involves. Believe it or not, as weird as that sounds. So if you want to, you can call in. And the numbers to call in are right on the website now, so you can just use one of those numbers. If you're in the U.S. or Canada, the numbers for, you know, the 800 numbers. And then I guess they got other numbers there if you want to spend money in calling, I guess. So anyway, here is the general idea. And that is that most of the complications that we are having from what I call energy type change, or ray change focus, in our world today, and it's really affecting us here, including our economy, is coming because we are having trouble spiritually balancing energy within ourselves and in our dealings with others. Now, you might say, oh, come on, it's because those darn oil companies, or it's because the financial institutions went crazy and people were greedy and all that. All those things are actual effects from people being out of balance in a spiritual sense. Some of that out of balance nature is not being able to, we'll say, discern the difference between individual, group, national, and even world karma. And we're very confused right now because, like, our political system, our president, the new administration, they're confused, in my opinion, and possibly on the wrong track. But so is everybody else. I mean, this isn't, I don't want to blame only, you know, like, the political system, but I'm going to bring it in because I think there's a lot of, you know, debate going on about health care and about carbon credits and all kinds of stuff going on. So I think it will be helpful to really understand what I mean, first of all. You know, I like to define things. I'm kind of one of these guys that has a definition urge or something. So what does it mean, first of all, to have karma? I mean, a lot of people say, well, karma, isn't that where you get punished when you do something bad and somebody maybe sends you a prize if you win, you know, like you win something or if you do something good? No, it's not exactly that. It's not even really that at all. It is the following. Karma is the result of separating time from space. What does that mean? All right, sounds like something Einstein would say. Yeah, it actually would be. And it's really this. It's that when we, in this realm, because we live in the lowest dimension of time and space that humans can physically live in, and when we do something here, because time is in a very weird way moving relatively slower than it is in other dimensions of time and space, we have, but it, when I say relatively slower, in reality, time for us seems like it's moving fast, but it's really not. It's actually moving slower. And people have more time to live in reality, because they're speeded up by the effects of time being changed in other dimensions. So it's like we're moving very, very, very slow. And as a consequence of this, when we do something that is inherently, we'll say, against our Creator, against God, it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't fit with God's creations. And we create in ways that are against God, or even just prevent others from creating. And so we don't really create ourselves, but we just stop others from doing it. Then the results can be the following, that although there is an effect from what we do, there's an effect from anything we do, and that effect is commensurate with what we do. So if we do something that's terrible, we should have a terrible effect from it. We. Individually. But the problem is that the effect takes so long here, so very long, for it to come back and affect us. The results in causal terms could be literally longer than we live in this particular lifetime here. So for some people, anyway. And the weird thing is that the more we aren't in accord with our Creator, the more it goes slowly. And you might say, well, what's that about? But when you're in accord with our Creator, even when you're here, you're in more sync with the time spectrum that that Creator creates within, which is a lot faster. So things happen faster. So the weird part about it is the better you are, the nicer you are. If you do something, you screw up, the results come back to you faster than the people who are always screwing up and don't care and are really, you know, they may not notice it for a long time. Maybe years. Could even pass their actual lifetime here. But that doesn't change anything, because in the next incarnation of that soul, they will still have to deal with it. And all of us are dealing with prior karma from prior lifetimes. All of us are, to some extent. It's part of being human, in a sense. So that's the goofy thing about karma, is that it's very hard to kind of get your head around it, because it seems to be counterintuitive until you start understanding how it actually is working. So it's really about this cause and effect thing, and it's a separation of causes from effects and time from space and goofy things like that. And when it happens, which happens all the time, we may not notice, therefore, there is a karmic relationship between what we do and what happens back to us. And again, it's not about punishment. So if you do things that are creative with our Creator, you're co-creating, you get good karma. And it kind of somewhat undoes similar bad karma. So you can actually get rid of some of the bad stuff from the past, even before it hits you. But it has to be similar. It can't be like, well, gee, you know, I'll go build some houses for Habitat for Humanity, but I'll knock off my next door neighbor because he's a son of a gun. Well, that those are not similar. So you're not going to necessarily undo the karma for knocking off the neighbor just because you built somebody a house, you see. Yeah, but, I mean, if it was similar, you know, if maybe you went and smashed something on your neighbor's house, you know, in a fit of rage or whatever, and then you went and built houses sometime later or a different time in your life and try to give back, actually, that might work. It might. Depends on the nature of what truly the effects were from damaging the house in the first place. Okay, so that's the basic thing about karma. Now, what's this individual versus group and all that business? Well, this is where it gets very interesting. I think you're going to find this part of the show now, after I got through all that definition business, pretty interesting, because it applies so much to everything that's going on. I mean, it's like, you know, once you get this concept, you start saying to yourself, I'm beginning to figure this thing out. Okay, here it is. Here's the deal. And again, it's sort of, I have to define individual and group, so stay with me on this, but this will be easier to understand because it's very simple. Individual karma, if it's negative or positive, it doesn't matter, is when most of the karma, more than half, most of the energy that is used in an activity is attributed to an individual. So if one person, as an individual, goes ahead and does something, and the majority of the energy that's expelled or done is from that one individual, then that's individual karma, good or bad, either way. And group karma is when more than one person, as a group, together in some respect, it doesn't have to be exactly at the same time, but it has to be with the same motive, thought, etc., because that's very important. Karma is motive. And so it's got to be the same kind of, connected event. I didn't want to say that word because that's another scientific thing, but we'll have to use it. Connected event. If those connected events are done by the group more than they're done by individuals, in other words, the energy that is put out that is connected to an event which also has to do with thought and other things, and I don't want to get too far upstream of this, but at any rate, they're all connected together, and it's put out by the group more than any individual. So say you have five people and each person put out more than any one person, then together that now becomes group karma, good or bad. Okay? Are you following me? I hope so, because it's not that hard to follow this part, right? And finally, if we're talking about national and world, well, now it's the same kind of definition. If it's taken, whatever we're talking about as an effect in time and space, is collectively being done by a nation rather than even a group or an individual, and the same is true if it's for the whole world, if you can imagine that, then it becomes national karma, or on the more rare side, a world karma. I mean, the world does function together sometimes, believe it or not, but it's not that often. And even nations have trouble sometimes functioning as a unit, we'll say. They do some things, obviously, that are unified, especially when it's military or something like that. But nonetheless, that's the concept there. Okay, so if you followed everything I said, now we're going to apply this to various situations. Let's say, and I'm going to use some, instead of this conceptual business, I'm going to use some real examples. Let's say that your next-door neighbor and about four or five other people that live in your neighborhood are people that you are close to, and maybe you're close to their families, too, and they're close to your family. Well, that's a group now, and maybe even go to the same church or the same schools. So now you have formed a group. And things that you do together as a group, things that you decide for each other as a group, become part of your karma. Now, here's an interesting thought, and I don't think too many people have thought about it this way. But let's say we'll have the big debate today is healthcare. I don't know. That seems to be the debate of the month, we'll call it. Last month it was energy. Next month it'll probably be some other goofy thing, because we're really not working on what we should be working, which is getting people to work, right? And fixing what is broken, which is the economic system. But anyway, okay, so let's say that you decided as a group now, with all the neighbors that are together, that you wanted to start your own healthcare plan. Well, that'd be cool. I mean, that'd be great. They call that like a cooperative, and maybe you did it through your church or your school, or just the neighborhood in general gets together, but only those people that I presume like each other and want to work together. So if you have a neighbor you don't like, you say, oh, he's not part of my group, I don't want him in there. Okay, you can do that. You can do that. That's perfectly okay. And then you have group karma. The group karma is that you are sharing in the effects of what is assigned to do. So if you say, well, everybody has to eat asparagus twice a week and broccoli once, because that makes you healthier and it keeps the cancer away. That's okay if everybody agrees on that. I mean, that's fun. But could you imagine if you weren't part of that group? Let's say you're one of the neighbors that you don't get along with those other people. You go to a different place, different school, maybe you don't want to have anything to do with the people and whatever. And they came in and knocked on your door and they said, you know what? You got to eat asparagus twice a week and broccoli once a week. There would be a problem there, wouldn't it? You would think that, hey, you're stepping on my freedom, and you're also intruding in on my karma. Now, there's an interesting thing here. Freedom is one part of the equation, of course. There's no question about that. But there's another issue here, and this has so much to do with what we're dealing with in our society today. You see, it works like this. If you decide for others that you're going to take over their karma, and it's really their individual karma you're taking on, there's another part of karma you need to know about. And that is when you try to take, anyone tries to take over the karma of a different class, like individual karma, you try to take it over and you're a group, that causes darkness in both sides of the people. Now let me explain how it does. See, if you decide, well, I'm going to take over the karma of all those individuals out there because I want them to be healthier because whatever, I think it's good for them. Or I don't want to pay for it when they go to an emergency room or do something other expensive thing or whatever it's going to be. I want to do all that because that's what I want to do. And I'm going to use government as an instrument, or I'm going to use maybe just the neighborhood police force or whatever, or homeowners associations. Those are really cool, aren't they? They love to do this sort of stuff. Let me tell you, there's probably no one that enjoys doing this more than homeowners associations, if you belong to one that's mandatory. Okay, so now you got this thing going, and you got a problem. Because you're now taking over the individual karma of people on a group level that you're not supposed to be doing because they're not really, it's not really group related because the person is still controlling more of the energy than the group is, even though you're taking charge of it. It's a weird kind of situation. What it does is the following, and this is kind of scary. When people are in charge of their health, which they should be, for the most part, they learn, they grow in consciousness as they suffer the results of the karma of neglect. They become, over a long period of time, because remember, karma goes real slow here, so does health, because the two are connected together. Karma is a very, very strongly represented issue in terms of health, you see. And so people no longer get the direct results of the karma on an individual level because now the group is going to take care of it, right? Okay. And the long-term approach to that becomes that people become less responsible, less wise. They actually become, in many respects, less healthy and will probably die earlier from things like rationing and inefficiencies and other things that are consequences of this wrong way of dealing with karmic responsibilities. And then you could say, well, what about the group that's doing it? Well, how do they suffer? And how do they become darker? You said darker. And yeah, I did say darker. They become darker because they now become a victim of the individual karma that they have inappropriately taken from others. Now you might think, well, but they're trying to do a good thing. They want to take care of those people. They should be eating broccoli once a week and asparagus twice a week because it helps get rid of cancer. Well, that might be true, you see. But until the people who have the individual karma have enough consciousness to join a group voluntarily, completely, and want that individual, and want that group to be part of their way of functioning, it doesn't work for them. They don't get any wiser, they get sicker, and the system fails. Instead of being healthier, they will become sicker in many respects. So you see, this is a goofy thing. And I'll go a little bit further with this. Let's say that you wanted to run a whole society like this, where the whole society has only group karma. It says there are no individuals. Everybody is part of a group in some respect. Everything is about the group. It's about our nation. You could call that socialism or fascism. And you might follow an economic system invented by Marx and Engels. And that system says that if you need something, you need it as part of the resources of the group. And you only have to effectively pay for it as a percentage member of that group, not as a responsible karmic implication of what you're taking or not taking. So interestingly, everybody becomes more selfish. Selfishness, darkness becomes the entire part of the consciousness of the society. And you say, well, wouldn't it be true in a utopian world that couldn't you live that way, that everybody, yeah, if everybody has enough consciousness to function as a completely responsible member of a group, you don't have to worry about individual karma because you have now graduated out of individual, you're now working in such a high level of consciousness that it's actually possible to do that. The only problem is there's no place on Earth today no nation. I don't even know a town. I don't even know a village that is presently functioning that way, that maybe has more than a few dozen people in it or something like that. And even then, I'm not sure. You see, it's extremely difficult to achieve these kinds of results. Now, what if you wanted to do only a part, a little part, of group karma? Maybe some kind of healthcare system in a very small country where the people have a different attitude about healthcare, and they already are fairly healthy people and are already living in pretty good ways to keep their health. Actually, that might work. It's possible. You might not have to have the high consciousness that you would have to have in a whole society. So it's really possible. But in a huge country like the United States, I don't think so. Maybe if we all moved to Switzerland, it actually might work. But even there, they don't have that kind of system. They actually have private insurance. You may not know that. Okay, so here, looking at this situation, how do we manage then to determine where you draw the line? Because there's some things that are group karma. Group karma is like protection. Don't we have a military? I mean, we don't each have our own little band of people we belong to as a military, but in Switzerland they do, by the way. But here we don't, because we're a very big country, and that requires group karma. It requires national karma in order to function correctly. So individuals really, you know, we can say, well, yeah, I'll buy a gun and I'll defend my family and my neighborhood or what. Yeah, you know, that's great. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, good thing, whatever. I mean, but it doesn't change on a national level. You're not going to have an anti-missile missile or a nuclear weapon or a submarine or something in your backyard. And so that's out of the question. You can't do it. So it's not, you can see where that comes in. And all kinds of other ways that we function together that are absolutely necessary in order to achieve the results. We're not going to go out and individually build roads, right? We're not going to go out and probably build too many schools, although a lot of people now are doing homeschooling and stuff, because for them, the national and or local governmental approach to education has not been what they want. So they take it down to an individual level. But remember, every time most of the energy is being put out by the individual, that the karma is the individual in that situation. Very interesting. I find this fascinating to consider, because there are many, many implications for all of us to learn something about respecting the laws of karma and about how this really is out of balance today. I mean, people are running around every which way trying to literally figure this thing out. They can't in many respects, because the centers that are out of whack together, which is our throat chakra that gives us a sense of communication and civilization, is out of balance with our sense of spiritual development. And we're way too material. We try to decide most things based upon material outcomes instead of spiritual results. So consequently, when we try to understand this business about who should be responsible for what in our lives, it gets confusing. And many times in the recent year or two, the shift has been for people to start believing that the group karma should be group control, and group karma should be the answer for most people's individual issues. And I'm afraid that's going to really come back to bite us seriously as a, we'll say, darkening effect in the consciousness on both sides of the fence, those that it's being done to and those that are, you know, that are willing to go along with it. Now, what about people who say, yeah, I want to go on, I want to be taken care of, and I don't want to be responsible. I don't want to have to enjoy any of the effects from my individual karma. I'm already 200 pounds over, 100 pounds overweight, and I already have two different cancers and this and that, and I want protection and everything else. What about those people? Don't we have some compassion for them? Don't we have some responsibility for people who have really screwed up, and shouldn't there be something that could be done for them? The answer is yes. Now, that may sound contradictory. You say, well, wait a second, you just spent the last 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the show telling us that you shouldn't. No, what I was telling you is that you don't, on an involuntary basis, make it so that people can't shift their karma. We can, and we should be concerned about people that are screwing up and give them some kind of, we'll say, second chance. But the second chance has to be that they create more good karma in the process and not that they're just given to. That's the difference. One is like just being given to sort of the welfare model, I guess you would call it that. I don't know, there's a lot of name for it, a lot of names for it. And then the other way to look at it is that instead of going down that road, why not offer people some way of repayment for what they're going to get? So let's say you have a catastrophic, I'm using healthcare again because that's the big, that's the buzzword this month. You know, I might as well use that one instead of, if it was last month, I'd be talking about energy. But, okay, so let's say that we are concerned about people who have no insurance, and mostly it's catastrophic. You see, this isn't really, it shouldn't be about, you know, paying every penny of every what are people doing. But if you have a really major thing going wrong, you may never get out of it. So what can we do for those people? Well, I think there could be private insurance companies, not public. I don't believe in the public thing because it's against the concept of who is best able to contribute and create. And it is definitely not our government. In this respect, I mean, if you're talking about protecting us with nuclear missiles, I'd say the government. If you're talking about who's going to come up with a major medical catastrophic health care plan, let's leave that to insurance companies, but subsidized to some extent by everybody. We all put in a little money into it, but we give it to all these private insurance companies, and they each have to participate to some level, whatever the proportion of regular insurance policies. So that they cover these people, but only under this basis. Anyone who actually takes from it has to, if at all possible, I'm assuming that, you know, there's maybe a few people who won't be able to do this because it's so messed up, they could, you know, they can't even get out of bed or whatever, or they can't think and they can't do anything. But for most people, they could do something. And they must do something for the common good, maybe to help these other insurance companies provide for this plan. Maybe they provide 10 hours a week of service answering calls for the group of insurance companies that participate in it free. That's to pay back. It may not completely pay back. It may only do it a little bit on an average, but the point is, it is a way of getting people to contribute back and therefore overcome some of their individual karma that has been taken over somewhat by group, and they still are sharing in an individual basis. And they're doing all of this on a volunteer basis, so at least it isn't being forced down. They're there, they don't have to eat broccoli and asparagus. They're not being forced to. Okay. All right, well, listen, we're going to go to break right now. And I'll be back with a lot of more ideas about this. A lot more to think about. This is a show to try to get people to think. I'm not telling you it has to be one way or another or anything. I'm just trying to give you some ideas here so we can understand the problems. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes and talk more about this.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today we're talking about spiritual implications of individual versus group, national, world, you name it, karma. I guess we could go beyond the world, but I don't know how that would make any difference. Okay, so continuing on, I hope I'm not losing people on this, but I'm trying to show how the fact that our sacral center, that's the name of the center that is opposing the throat chakra, and that is strengthening in us right now. It is becoming stronger, but the throat chakra is just incredibly strong compared to the sacral center in most people. The sacral center would be giving us a lot better understanding of the things I'm telling you if it was working in people. And the throat chakra is working, but it's working only materially because people have overused it for selfish gain for centuries. I mean, this has been going on for a long time, and this is the third type of energy that helps to grow that center. And it's going out of focus right now. I mean, it reaches its peak in the fall of 2012, and after that, it's just going to diminish. And luckily, the fourth type of energy, which has to deal with the sacral center, will get stronger. And that will allow us to create more of a balance in these subjects that I'm bringing up right now. And I don't want to, and if you're big into healthcare, I'm not trying to pick on healthcare. It's just that I want to use an example that is right there. I mean, it's like, you know, like you turn on the news, it's like healthcare, 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 healthcare. I know the president's on every other day about healthcare and this and that. I don't know. I'm just suggesting some kind of alternatives because right now, I think the present movement for the last year or two in both politics, government, solving things, has been to try to take too much individual karma and freedom, by the way. It's another show, and I've dealt with that somewhat tangentially in the last few months, away from people. And when you do from individuals and try to make it into some kind of group thing, and it's not. Now, I'm really big into groups. I want you to know that. I'm a member of a spiritual group. We try to do good things in the world. That's what it's about, really. And if you ever want to do something in some way with us, either as a group or an individual, you can call. You can call us and let us know about it, and we'll see what we can do about that. But I think the important thing here is to realize that we don't go out and tell people that they've got it. Do something. We wait, just as I just suggested, for others who want to join us. Or if we see an opportunity where someone else is doing something, we may ask to join them. But you see, this is way different than what's happening, isn't it? So we really are going about this whole thing in a goofy way. And it's going to probably bite us pretty badly. Now the karma from it probably won't hit us because everything's slow, remember? For 5 years or so. But by then, we'll be so deep in it, we will be maybe in big, big trouble. And one of the things that I worry about is that this sort of consciousness happens when it happens during severely bad economic times, which is where we are right now. Governments become totalitarian in their approach. And that would be a very disastrous thing. And there's some signs that that could happen here. So we don't want that, because if it does go that way, it'll be the end of our country. And for those of you listening out of country, take note of this. I mean, it's not just happening here in the U.S. It's everywhere. I know some listeners are all over the world. I know that because they contact us sometimes. So if you're listening even in another country, and maybe you've already had that, you know, you've had some of these things going on more than here, more than in the United States, then you know what I'm saying. And it's a big concern. All right, so what else can we do to make sure that we're on the right track in terms of balancing these questions of individual versus group? Well, the simplest way is to ask yourself how much energy is being expended by the individual versus the larger group, nation, etc., in terms of the outcome or the effect. Healthcare is a big, big, obvious one. I would say no matter what kind of healthcare plan you produce, unless you're going to imprison people, literally, it's almost exclusively an individual karmic issue. Do you see what I'm saying? Why that would be the case? Now, I did say there are exceptions. What if everybody was really doing the right thing and everybody's in the health? And well, hey, then you might be able to form a group of people that really have a shared consciousness. And it is about consciousness. Thought has a lot to do with this thing. And part of consciousness, part of thought is consciousness. And so if you have that shared element, that'll work out. I really believe that could work out where the group can actually function together. But if it is as it presently is, at least in the United States, you've got people doing all kinds of different things, and that creates all kinds of issues. I'll give you an example. The spiritual group I'm a member of and a bunch of other people that we are close to know, you know, we really believe in alternative health approaches. We believe strongly in trying not to follow allopathic pharmaceutical, for those of you who aren't familiar with that word, allopathic type of outcomes and force centers into trying to make them work properly without balancing them first. We also like homeopathic medicines and use them. I mean, so we have a different approach, but in a system that is completely run by an external national type of medicine, those things become extinct. They become driven out and oftentimes illegal. This is what happened back in the early 90s. And the year following the Hillary Care plan, I guess people call it that anyway, Clinton Care or whatever, luckily our Congress passed the Deshaies Act to try to protect, people, to give them some rights to use alternative health products, et cetera. But now you should be aware that all of that's going by the wayside. The FDA has sued General Mills for selling Cheerios with the statements that it may be good to lower your cholesterol, which is hundreds of studies that show that, them claiming that Cheerios is a drug then. That's bizarre. I mean, it's so far bizarre, it's ridiculous. But if they win, there won't be a single right that anybody who is into any kind of herbal, even if you take vitamin C, you're not going to be able to take very much, if any, of that. Every right that people think they have may vanish in that respect. And that's because of this imbalance. And it's because those who are presently running the government are way out of balance with it, way out of balance. They are seeking to control and are grossly irresponsible, if you ask me, but they're seeking to control others, and they aren't even exercising proper control in their own lives necessarily, and besides which, what are they doing? They're shifting the karmic issues. They are interfering with individual karma and saying, well, that's now national karma. We're going to take that over. Now, I hate cigarettes, cigarette smoking, tobacco use in general. I think it's terrible for many reasons. But at the same time, you know, if people really want to do that and they do it in a way that doesn't affect other people, it's becoming harder to do that, I realize, because there's so many communities that don't let people smoke in restaurants and whatever. But still, if that's what you want to do, I would say you need to learn. And the individual karma from that might be lung cancer or throat cancer or whatever 20 years from now. And that might stay with you, so the next lifetime you'll be more responsible, not just about smoking, but so many other things. So then I say, okay, go ahead. And then people say, well, they're going to be in your health care plan and they're going to drive up the cost. Not necessarily. Just have the health care companies, which are already doing it, say, if you want to smoke, your insurance is going to cost you X amount of dollars. You know, it's going to be a lot more money because you're going to probably die early and have a lot of serious problems. You know, not that we won't insure you. If you want to pay half of your savings, half of your money you earn, so that you can smoke, then go ahead. Yeah. And I that may sound a little cruel, or it sounds like, well, you don't care about those people. No, I do care about them. I care about everybody having the opportunity to raise their own consciousness and create their own wisdom so that they can become a better co-creator with God. That's what it's really about. That's called soul reasoning and soul consciousness. I realize on a personal level it doesn't sound all that warm and fuzzy and friendly. And that's why I probably would never get elected for any kind of public office, because that is the present model, is to offer people things that make it sound warm and fuzzy and very personal, but not good for them on a soul level. You've got to look at this more from the standpoint of how does it affect someone to help them to become better souls. Not just like, oh, well, I'll make them more comfortable when they die from lung cancer. That doesn't make any sense. You know? It really doesn't. And what about people who are elderly? I really like this because I kind of fall in that category, I think. But what about people who are elderly? Okay. I think that the elderly are entitled to have some type of reasonable, whatever works for most elderly people, health care on a catastrophic level again. I don't think that it should pay for everything. I think that's silly. But if they get very sick, they should have something available to them. And I think there should be a savings plan if a person chooses to opt for it to keep them alive for even absurd amounts of time and money if that's what they choose. And if instead they choose not to have it, then they don't have to put any money towards it. They don't have to put any time or energy towards it. And they don't have to pay anybody back while they're contributing to their plan. Because I think if someone wants that, if they say, gee, I want to absolute everything done for me during the last 2 months of my life, I want to spend $150,000 laying in some bed somewhere with my four IVs and a heart-lung machine going and everything else. Fine. Okay, that's cool. Then for the next 20 years, if that's what you're opting for, you're going to help work creating some good karma for other people. Maybe you'll go and work in a hospice to help people who are dying like that. Maybe you can contribute in some other way. Or you can just pay a huge amount of money if that's what you have. If you got $1 million, put it in a savings account and it's all set. Or give it over to the insurance company and they'll take care of it. But there you go. Now you've got your ultimate option for those people who want that. That's cool. That's all right. And for the people who don't want that and say, hey, you know what? I want minimal care. It's the end of my life. I'm ready to go. Okay, fine. But nobody should be making a decision about that for someone other than the individual. You see what I'm saying? That isn't something you make a decision about. It's like, well, you know, 100 years? After 100 years, if someone needs a pacemaker, too bad. You know, that's what our president said a couple days ago. You need to understand something, that we cannot live taking responsibility for everything somebody does, because if we live that way, we don't live at all. And all that happens in those kinds of circumstances is we're making everybody selfish, and we think we're not. We think we're giving to them, when actually what we're doing is we're taking from them. We're taking from them the ability to become a co-creator with their creator. We're taking from them the ability, if they so choose, to do something good. Now, what about the people who are totally atheistic and they don't care about their co-creators? Fine, it's okay. That's all right. Nobody's going to force them to do anything. But you see, this is the point I'm trying to make. If you're going to respect others' responsibilities, if you're going to respect their individual rights, then you can't expect for others to take care of you as though you don't have any responsibilities and you don't even have any rights other than the right to be taken care of. This is a system that is very bad, and that we need to be very careful about if we're going to get through these times. Let's talk about economic things, because I really think that's our biggest problem right now. How do we deal with the karma of our nation in terms of economics? Well, we are a very giving nation. We provide more in terms of giving to even countries that are our worst enemies, including North Korea, than any other country on the planet by many factors of like 10, 20, or 30 times more. But I don't think we're doing it in the best way. I think there we're making the same mistakes that we're making internally on an external basis. And this is affecting us economically, that our giving is not on a high enough level, both in a national scale and on group scales. We look at the personal nature of things instead of give more to people who can participate but choose either not to or are our enemies against us. We think by giving food and whatever, shelter, whatever, to our enemies, that's going to make them like us. You know what? They've been doing that for since the Cold War started, and, 46, 47, and it really hasn't worked. What would work is to use a carrot and stick method, which I think is you encourage people to do good things, and you are willing to help them and give to them when they do. And when they don't, you clobber them. I mean, don't give them more food. Let them starve if that's what they're going to, if that's the result of their bad behaviors, then let them suffer those consequences. That's a better answer, at least in one respect. Now, what about the issues like, well, we're very concerned about, and you know I'm big about this, very concerned about the potential global warming issues and potential climate change. And whether you believe it or not, it's human-caused, if, in fact, our climate is changing, whether you believe it's coming from human factors or not. We need to do something about it because we're going to suffer the consequences regardless of whether we're the cause of it or not. It would be good to do something to try to reverse it. I'm definitely in favor of that. But this may surprise you, although I've said it before. I believe we should be developing every source of energy we have right now to the maximum extent, but in a way in which the cost, the real cost of producing whatever we're producing is just right there in front of you. I believe that coal, for the most part, can be created into syngas and used in many ways that is less harmful to the environment. And that's a good use of coal. That natural gas could replace many of the uses that we're presently using for coal and oil, which also reduces the amount of greenhouse gases and other kinds of pollutants. And we have huge stores of natural gas. Why aren't we doing something about it? Well, right now, the present administration and the past one, for different reasons, very different reasons, have not chosen to fully develop these resources, and in some cases have actually chosen, the present administration has, to actually prevent the development of these resources, which is cutting down somewhere between 1 and 2 million jobs per year. 1 to 2 million jobs per year by just that one segment of the economy. And they're talking about the green job is going to make up for it. Well, where are those green jobs? I'm in the business. Did you know that? That's one of our businesses. I'm in the business. And no green jobs. You can't even sell a solar collector in Arizona right now. And it's amazing because nobody has any money to buy one. Okay. And because it's not an efficient technology to be fully disclosed about it at this point. Okay, so here we go. We got some serious issues going on here. 1 to 2 million jobs. And it's really probably closer to the 2 million mark. I'm just giving you the lowest number possible and the more appropriate number is about 2 million jobs. Well, 2 million jobs would probably make a huge difference in our economy. And that's going to natural gas. What if we open up the oil fields, particularly offshore drilling, which can be done more carefully now. Even some places, Anwar in Alaska, I think there is now. I was against it 10 years ago, but I think today we have the technology. We can do it without harming. All these things would get us off of foreign oil. We're still using plenty of oil, so why not use the oil we've got? Get us using mostly natural gas, which is way better. And if you add the oil with the natural gas now, the oil, and then you take all the coal and you make as much syngas with it, you're still going to have to use some of it for some of the plants that are existing because 51% of our energy comes from it. Then you take that, you take a small amount of the profits from that industry, and you help the newer technologies, which are really going to need 5 or 10 years before they're going to be of any use. Do all that, and now you've doubled the jobs. Now you're probably talking about, somewhere between 2, 3, up to 4 million more jobs. Well, that would get us out of the quote-unquote recession, I call it depression, that we're in. And that's a huge, huge difference. What does that mean karmically? That means that we can take responsibility for these things on a national karmic level to change it, because it can only be done on that level. Individuals can't do this. You can't go in your backyard and dig a oil well or dig for gas. And this is the critical element. You see how we're just completely out of kilter. And everything is being done for basically crazy reasons, things that don't make sense, especially right now. I can keep going. There's a lot more to talk about. Maybe I will next week talk about some other issues in terms of us not getting it right. But we may want to think very strongly about how we're not aware of the true mistakes that we are making at this time. At any rate, I am out of time. I mean, really out of time. If you want, I'm telling you, this ideal cell sorption resveratrol, you should go to foreveryoungproducts.com. Remember, I'm associated with that. And check it out. Check it out because it really works. I'm doing some more experiments. I'll tell you about that next week. I'm out of time to explain it right now. And, there's just so much more to say. If you would like to contact us, you can call 800-777-7850. About anything I talked about tonight, because there's lots of things that we maybe should continue this conversation with. Well, we're out of time for right now, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.